everyone, this is Dylan.
And this is Fortune, also known as A Restless Mind on YouTube.
And welcome to episode 7 of Cinescussion.
And we are doing this through Discord due to me being sick. Luckily not COVID, but trying not to get Dylan R here sick. So sorry if the sound quality isn't as perfect. We're kind of makeshifting this. But yeah, so
I've avoided any type of cold or cough for this entire pandemic, so thank you. I did not want to break my streak this day or any other.
Yeah, I got it from my brother, who's my roommate. Damn him.
Well, welcome back, everyone. Today, we have a really fun topic. We have a couple movies that recently came out that we were able to see that we're going to go into our, not full review, but just our feelings on the films and just kind of some quick, impressions. And then I could not find it.
Impressions is good considering one of them.
And then after that, the bulk of our podcast today, we're going to be diving into our thoughts and feelings over the entire Alien versus Predator, I guess, franchise, saga,
yeah,
weird combination of movies.
Yeah, they both have their own franchises. So yeah, both franchises, I guess.
Right. Where we've been able to watch most, if not all, of the films in each over the past 2 weeks. I wasn't able to complete them all, but at this point now, I was able to complete 7 of them. And I've seen them all, except for one, which is Shane Black's Predator. But Fortune's seen that. And he'll be able to dive into how much I'm not missing anything.
Yay.
But let's kick things off, man. So I was able to see a couple movies over the last 2 weeks. One we watched on HBO. It was Malignant. We were able to watch that at home by James Wan and Warner Brothers deal with HBO on at home and in theater simultaneous releases. And then I was also able to see Shang-Chi in the theaters. And one of these movies I loved.
Oh man.
I really enjoyed one of these movies.
That's what it sounds like.
But let's discuss the one we both saw. James Wan. He's a fantastic director.
He is.
I hear that you are potentially a fan, would be a good word, of this this horror mastermind. What did you think of his new movie, Fortune?
Malignant. So this film is, the best way to put it is I find it interesting. Now, interesting is not good, but it is. But it is interesting. To me, this felt like a film that James Wan picked up and did in between doing Aquaman like 1 and 2, and it seems like he was trying to play, essentially, because the plot, the idea definitely is tricky to direct well and to pull it off, because there are things about the character that I found interesting when the character would show up, the villain of the piece is what I'll say, and I thought that the scenes were the thing that's really upsetting about the film to me, though, is that the first hour or so, it feels really generic in a lot of ways. Like, even though there are some cool shots in here and there, like the murder scenes, the script, everything feels almost like kind of a straight to video, like not in terms of production quality, but the script and the characters and stuff, they just feel really subpar. But one thing I thought was interesting was whenever the villain showed up, they had this odd way that they were moving. And it almost gave me some, if you ever saw the movie from like the 90s called The Arrival, it gave me some of those vibes here and there. And I thought that it was just a directorial decision because it was creepy, you know, because a lot of directors do stuff like that just because it's creepy. What I like about it is the twist of the movie, essentially, is the best way to put it is, if you've seen a lot of movies like this, it's exactly what you thought it was going to be, but in no way in the way that you thought it was going to be. So I feel like the twist of the movie basically leads to this like 10 to 15 minute long action sequence that's like awesome. Like, it's like a 10 out of 10. There's also another chase sequence in the film between the detective, one of the detectives, and the villain that's really awesome too. And I would say that those are the best parts of the film. So essentially, the best parts of the film are when it becomes like this kind of action thriller. And it seemed like he was kind of having fun with, you know, drastically switching genres very quickly. And I don't think that there's a problem. That can work. But I think the problem is when the first hour of the film isn't that great, and it doesn't have any interesting characters except for the lead, basically. It kind of leads you to not care about anybody else in the film. And then by the time that happens, it feels more like this really awesome segment in the middle of a film that's not very good. And then after that action set piece, there's the ending, which just kind of makes you roll your eyes. So it's just kind of like, is it a good movie? No, but I thought it was, put it this way, I thought those sections were very interesting is the best way to put it. And I guess that's me saying everything I have to say about that one. What about you, Dylan? What did you think?
Yeah, this entire movie, we talked about it, I think, two nights ago over text message really briefly. And I stand by my thoughts that this just felt like a giant pot of James Wan things thrown in, stirred together with a terrible script. I think that, like, it has these really cool circular tracking shots you've seen him do in other movies. It has these, like, haunted house sections that you've seen him do in other movies with these really cool these kind of really interesting shots that you don't see often where they don't cut away. Like, I remember there's a shot where a character goes down into the first floor of his home, and, you know, haunting things start happening. A blender turns on, a door opens, and he walks over and there's this figure sitting on his couch, and the lights go out and the camera never cuts. He turns the light back on and it's on, and then you see the couch kind of raised, like something was clearly sitting there, and I was like, ah, that's cool. Like,
it is, just,
you know, but at the...
I also liked the top-down shot as she ran through the house. It's almost like a top-down video game. That was really cool.
Yeah, that was really cool too. But with that being said, there are these cool things that kind of feel like his staples now that happen in the movie, but I felt like there was no quality control with the acting. I didn't feel like the suspense or the editing was as strong as any of his other movies. I'm just going to go back to the acting. I think the lead actress in this movie just backpacks this whole film. Like, every other character around her,
100%.
I don't know, was there anybody to just be like, hey, let's do another take? Was there anybody to just say, let's try that one more time?
Maybe it was one of those things where they got her from Peaky Blinders, and then the rest of the budget was to pay James Wan.
Right, exactly. And unfortunately, you know, there is a cool reveal in the movie. That's all I'll say about that. But as I'm looking at this monster that's moving in this really weird way, I'm like, in my head, I'm like, okay, that's kind of cool. But also, I'm like, oh no, it's the backwards man. You know.
Okay, I'm glad you said it that way. I was gonna say something else, then I realized that might be a spoiler.
Yeah, no spoilers. But I mean, the overall design was interesting, but up until there's this reveal, I didn't think it was that cool.
No, not at all. Like, it's not good, and then that's cool, but that's about it. And the other thing is, I just want to say, when we'll just go with that code name, when the backwards man is revealed, does it not seem to me, like, to you, like, the costume is basically the pig costume from Saw with the long coat, just minus the pig face with the different face with the long hair instead, kind of?
Yeah. You know, I was trying to think, like, if this was harkening back. So there is a movie that it does harken back to that I think came out in the 80s, but I'm not going to say it because it was a little bit of a spoiler.
Okay.
Other than, like, that story plot point, I was like, what is this harkening back to? Like, is this supposed to be like an 80s movie? No, it's not supposed to harken to the 80s. Is it like a 90s slasher? No, it doesn't feel like that. And I was like, did you just do like a weird callback movie to the early 2000s? Like that's kind of what it felt like.
To me, the film felt, like I said, like he was playing. Like, it's like, I'm going to make a horror film that becomes like an action film that ends as a horror film. And it's like, I don't think that, I'm not saying that that can't work, but the horror film building up to it has to be good. Like,
you know, it's like... Yeah, exactly. But that being said, James Wan's talent is still displayed on the screen. He's still exploring interesting ideas that I haven't seen anybody like try in a long time. For sure. Cool.
And I don't think he wrote it or anything. I personally think this feels like a project that he's in between Aquaman. He had some time to do something else. He probably found a script that he probably didn't even care if it was good. He thought the concept of the twist was cool. And I think he was like, I can do whatever I want. I'm a big director and I want to just try to, I just kind of want to make this to challenge myself. I think it could be fun. And I think he just did that and then moved on like that. Like, I could be wrong. I'm not saying he doesn't care about the movie, but I mean, I think what interested him was putting it together in a way that still worked with that twist. As I think, like, to me, as like, to me, I would find that interesting and kind of fun as a director, but that might mean that maybe he didn't care as much about the overall story. Maybe he just liked the concept and that was it, you know? And he just, you know, I mean, that's just my opinion, but maybe, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I almost wish, like I mentioned, this feels like a lot of James Wan kind of thrown into a pot, but it also feels like there's a lot of ideas on what the movie wanted to be conflicting with each other.
Yeah.
And I think the movie would have been infinitely better if they would have taken out all the weird supernatural elements. Like, they could have kept like the visions changing and like, you know, why is our character seeing these terrible events? But when it comes to like the monster, like speaking through electronics and all of these other things that are kind of like vaguely implied why he can do that, as well as a few kind of haunting scenes, if they would have run this as kind of like a detective thriller that happened to be more gruesome, I think there was a better movie there.
I think so. Cool. I think so too. I think that would have been cool too, because then the twist would have actually been that it has kind of a, I don't know what you call it, not really supernatural, but it has almost like a biological or supernatural. It would basically be more like a serial killer movie that becomes a horror. Like, you would still change the genre, but instead of it being like a supernatural drama that becomes an action set piece thing, it would be like a thriller that becomes almost like a kind of supernatural horror slash action set, you know, like I feel like I get what you're saying. Like, that probably would have worked better. I think you're right, actually.
Yeah. But all is not lost. There was another movie that I saw.
And I'm so jealous because I wanted to see it so bad. I'm so jealous. I haven't had a chance to see it yet.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the, my expectations were, flipped and subverted on me, because I was very excited for Malignant.
Yeah.
I was not very excited for Shang-Chi. You know me in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I could leave all of them at the door and just kind of go about my day just fine.
And this was one of the few Marvel movies I was excited about for reasons I obviously told you.
Yeah, yeah. I remember texting you right after I got out, and I was like, Fortune, I thoroughly enjoyed this movie, and I haven't said that about a Marvel movie in a very long time.
Yeah.
Like, in a very long time.
For those of you that don't know, there's a YouTuber named Christopher C. Cohen. He goes as RivenX3i on YouTube. I've followed him for, like, I don't know, 8 years or something, like a long time. But he started doing a lot of really cool martial arts set pieces and, like, fan Naruto films and things. And, like, his action choreography and design is fantastic. It was miles ahead of a lot of the stuff that you see in Hollywood. And he's also one of the few people, if you love My Hero Academia, he has like a fan My Hero Academia concept thing that he did. He's one of the few people that can do live action that actually looks like anime in a way that's not crap. Like, probably him and the Wachowskis so far can do. And he does it with like no money. So like, and then lately he's been kind of blowing up and he's been doing the action set pieces for more films. I think I saw that he did Kingsman, The Golden Circle. He worked on as an action designer on this film, apparently with another person. I think he might have worked on the new Kingsman movie too, but I'm not sure. But the point is, he's been doing things. And this was his big Marvel film. And I've even seen some of the actors who've done stunts with him show up as stunt doubles and actors in Marvel films as like people to get thrown around and stuff. So it's really cool just seeing all these people really making it to Hollywood. It's like watching something that was just these people with this passion and drive that were really good, and actually watching them succeed is so cool. So the fact that he got to be one of the action designers in a huge Marvel film is just like, I just wanted to see it to support him. And I didn't even know who the director was originally, but the fact that the director apparently had the wherewithal to hire him makes me like the director already, because it means like you really care about good action, you know, like, and you're willing to source, you know, to people that will deliver on whatever your vision is, which, yeah. So that's my rant, but that's just me loving this whole situation. So
No, that's fantastic. And, you know, I mentioned during our Marvel episode that it feels like Marvel will find a director who has like one or two successful like personal projects under their belt
Yep.
and then bring them into the Marvel universe. And I think that is so you don't have somebody who's been in the industry long enough to really want as much creative control as somebody who,
Yep.
you know, is an auteur and really makes those movies. But they brought in
I agree. I think
His name, I hope I'm not butchering it. It's Destin Daniel Creighton.
Okay.
And I saw his movie that kind of blew him up. It was a movie starring Brie Larson and Lakeith Stanfield called Short Term 12.
Yeah, I've heard of that.
It's excellent. If anybody's interested, it's a drama movie about kids going through kind of their personal demons in this youth camp that kind of doubles as a kind of a therapy clinic.
Yeah.
And it's excellent, but to see him take on action so confidently, because from my perspective, directing action is probably the most difficult thing to do
I agree.
ever for our.
I agree. I think I just want to add one word. I think directing good action. Yeah. It's hard.
And I mean, he knocks it out of the park in this movie.
I've heard.
I grew up on authentic Chinese action movies. Like
Me
I
too.
remember owning a DVD set of Once Upon a Time in China. If anyone hasn't had a
Oh
chance to see these Jet Li classics, every
yeah.
single one is phenomenal.
And the classic Jackie Chan ones are great too. Like like.
No doubt. Oh, I love Police Story.
Dude, the Police Story trilogy. Dude, Supercop, I think, is one of the greatest action films of all time. And do you know that Michelle Yao did every single one of her own stunts, including the motorcycle jump onto the train? It was to the point where she cracked the joke that Jackie actually, at when she did the train jump, he was like, "You have to stop because every time you do one of these amazing stunts, I have to one up you because it's my movie."
Man, dead competition because that train jump is insane.
No,
It's
she's a
insane.
legend. Yeah.
So one thing that you know, I was thinking about it when I was watching the movie, and everybody was excited to see like authentic martial arts in a Marvel movie. And I was coming from the place of, guys, there have been authentic martial arts scenes going on in
Yeah,
movies
one.
for forever,
Yeah.
but I haven't seen them celebrated in a mainstream way like this before. From the action scenes being delivered the way they are to kind of the celebration of Chinese culture in the movie. Before I kind of like dive into like the story beats, just the overall presentation of the film felt fresh. It didn't feel like the story beats kind of felt like a Marvel movie for sure, and the kind of comedy that I'll get into later felt like a Marvel movie. But this also felt like it reminded me of like seeing Iron Man for the first time, like before this was all a giant franchise. You
That's
know, it felt
awesome.
like it felt like a self-contained, really deliberate vision of a movie that was just like, I'm not saying it was like the greatest thing of all time, like it's still a popcorn action flick, but it also didn't feel like it was just trying to set up something else. Like it really
Yeah.
felt like a step forward for where Marvel's going. And if their movies feel like this going forward, then I'm a little more excited than I was prior to this stage of Marvel. I'll say that.
And see, that makes me so excited because I was just excited for because of the people that were involved. And you also know that, a lot of people know me. I love shoot 'em up action, everything. John Wick's great. But like you, I grew up with a lot of Asian cinema and stuff. That's why, even a lot of people who love, Star Wars and stuff, I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. And then people talk about how amazing the Empire Strikes Back sword fight scene is, and I'm like, see, I grew up on action scenes from Asia and stuff where they were doing crazy stuff. So to me, that was really kind of lame. No offense, I wasn't bad. It was all right, but and I'm not saying it's bad if you did if you like that. There's nothing wrong with that. I just mean for me, I have a really high bar when it comes to action scenes, and a lot of action scenes I see in a lot of Marvel films, and not just Marvel films, but just like a lot of American films, especially when people get to fighting, it's just a lot of cutting to distract from the fact that the actors don't really know what they're doing. And I felt like the new Mortal Kombat did the same thing. It's very slow. It's a lot of cutting. And I love when people take the time to actually go through months of fight training, and you have great angles beautiful rotations and things that actually show off the stunts and show off the people really fighting. Like, that's why Jackie Chan used to say he hated like too many cuts, because it shows that they don't know what they're doing. He likes, you know, when something really cool happens, he wants to go to a wide angle, you know, because he wants to show you everything. So, you know, you're seeing exactly what's on display. And because his team and him are so good, they can do that. The cutting thing is kind of a necessity when you don't have people that can do that. And unfortunately, I feel like when you have the kind of money that Marvel has and a lot of these Hollywood films, there's no excuse not to have that nowadays. There's just not. So it means you're just kind of networking and going with people you know. But if they're to the point where you still have to do a lot of cutting, that's not good enough now. Like, you don't really have an excuse. There are independent people who could do work 10 times better than that, you know? So, you know, if I'm coming to see some movie that has fight sequences, make it awesome. You know, like, John Wick's actually pretty cool, but the director is a choreographer who's done really cool stuff his whole life. So it's being directed by someone who cares about that, you know? And clearly the Wachowskis, for instance, with the Matrix trilogy, no, they don't know martial arts, but they clearly value it and they know what's good because they hired one of the top Hong Kong martial arts choreographers of all time and shot it beautifully. So, you know, you can do it right if you really have the passion to care about those scenes. I think a lot of directors think of action scenes as just a scene, but they care more about the characters. And it's good to care about the characters, but your action scenes should be given the same amount of care as the character should, in my opinion. So I love it when you find a director that does it all, like that, or you can tell at least tries to do it all, you know, tries to care. So, and from what I'm hearing about this film, a lot of things are handled with care is the best way I can put it.
Yep. And that's totally right. And like I mentioned, if you look at, Dustin Creighton's, his current, the movies he's directed and produced prior to this, there's not action on there.
Just Mercy was another one. Just Mercy.
It really just comes down to caring, because movie making is a collaborative effort, and there are people with talent who can do these things and who will give you the best feedback on how to get it done in a way that's effective to an audience, because they're excited about it. Yeah. And I could tell that the director of this movie was really excited about it.
And see, that's awesome. And see, this is one of those situations where I'm happy. Like I can tell, like, I can't necessarily tell that I'm going to like a movie, but the fact that he hired Christopher C. Cohen means someone brought that person up to him, or he's seen his YouTube channel or something, but something about it, you know, he saw that and wanted that for his movie, which means, oh, you're already on the right track for a movie like this, to be honest, because Christopher Cohen is an African-American guy who clearly loves Asian culture. I mean, his entire channel, like the martial arts choreography, the things he loves like Japanese culture and Chinese culture. You can just tell he has a passion for these things, and you can tell he wants to do them justice. So, like, I love just seeing someone so immersed in technically another culture, and he gets so good at it that, in my opinion, he's one of the best choreographers and I don't even know if he actually knows martial arts. He might just know what's cool, you know, but he can still put stuff together in a way that's cool. And another thing I saw about some behind the scenes stuff with this film is I love Tai Chi, like, quite a bit. Like, I even thought about getting into Tai Chi Chuan and like push hand stuff like that, just because I find that stuff really interesting. And I heard that a lot of the movements and things in this are based off of like actual Tai Chi stances and Tai Chi movements. And they even brought in like an amazing stunt woman from China who specializes in Tai Chi. I was reading about it. So just a lot of things that really excite me personally. So they kind of got me on their like their fan list before I've even seen it. Like, I'm like, all of these pieces seem like they equal something I'd like. So, you know, unless I'm just totally misunderstanding, I feel like this is the Marvel movie that was made for me.
You know? Yep. I can't wait till you see it. And whenever you're feeling better, let me know, because I want to see it again.
I definitely will. I will. We will go see it for sure.
As far as Simu Liu, I hope I'm not mispronouncing his name, coming in as Shang-Chi, the guy has this amazing balancing act of having the charisma of being a superhero, but also having this delivery of somebody who starts this movie as a valet and who doesn't really understand the direction that he wants his life to go in. So he's just kind of letting life make decisions for him while he figures it out, and seeing his kind of lack of confidence shine through before he becomes this, or well, before it's revealed that he's this insane supernatural martial artist, he knocks it out of the park.
Oh, so he doesn't know that he is in the beginning?
It's not that he doesn't know that he is. It's there's a bit of a reveal that he's aware. I don't want to get too.
Okay, gotcha.
You know, before it's revealed to the audience.
Okay, you know? gotcha. Okay, cool.
But then again, we know because it's in the trailers, but you know.
Yeah, got it. Okay, cool.
But then, other than the action scenes, the most impressive piece of this movie was surprisingly the villain, which I never say about Marvel movies. They're all throwaways except for one particular Norse god and one particular purple man.
Who, and the Norse god isn't really necessarily a villain anymore, he's an anti-hero, right?
Yeah, so, right, exactly. And... to have a villain in this movie who's played by Tony Leung, who isn't inherently evil, like I know we morally gray villains is nothing new, but the way they set up his story in a way that is so sentimental and so kind of believable on why he's doing the things that he's doing, that you don't want him to succeed, but you also don't want him to fail in a particular way. That's what I'll say there. And the acting is phenomenal.
See, that's awesome. That's fantastic to me. Like I like villains where maybe they are villains, but you can kind of see their point, or you can see their viewpoint, or you understand why they are who they are, even if you don't agree with it. Like I like that. Like I hate when someone's just completely obviously bad guy for the sake of being bad guy. It just feels so unrealistic, you know what I mean? Like, so that's awesome. That's really great to hear. I'm so much more excited now than I'm gonna have to, like, I'm gonna try to go see it like Wednesday after work. So if you're free, maybe Wednesday, I don't know
for sure.
Okay.
And then I have two slight critiques.
Just sure,
two really quick ones.
Sure.
The movie feels about 15 to 20 minutes too long. There is a lull right in the middle of act two going into act three, where we got to get some context and go into some background information and learn some lore, and it really drags at that point. You really feel the energy of the movie drain for about 20 minutes.
Gotcha. Okay.
And then also, even though the comedy is good in this movie and it's effective, this is something that I felt about all Marvel movies, and I'm not why Marvel is uncomfortable letting any drama or sadness sit for a period of time without telling a joke to break the tension.
It irritates the F out of me. Like, it's like, oh, yes, it's a scene. I'm starting to feel something. Joke. Why? Like you're just awful. Yeah. Stop it. Like it's like...
This movie suffers from that, too, because this movie has some really strong family themes, and the emotional stakes in the movie are really high. And whenever it'll kind of flirt with the idea of taking the audience there, and the moment you start to be like, oh man, it's, let's crack a joke and move to the next scene. And I'm like, it's okay. Just let us be sad for a second. You know?
It's okay to let us feel freaking emotions. Like, I understand that you're trying to hit the largest demographic of all time, so you want everything to be happy and bubbly, but your movies would be better if you let people actually, you know, feel something and be people, but you know. Anyway, that's just me agreeing with you in a very frustrated way.
It is frustrating. But that being said, it is what it is. It is a Marvel movie. It doesn't kind of change the game in any way from kind of setting up this universe. But it did feel fresh. It did remind me of seeing the first Iron Man, as far as feeling like I'm seeing something new and a new direction. And I hope that the other standalone MCU films follow suit.
Fantastic. Okay, so now we're going to get into what the main crux of the episode is about, which is the Alien and Predator franchises. We both love sci-fi movies. I think we both grew up loving these monsters for various reasons. And in my opinion, some of what makes them awesome is their counterparts, the heroes and heroines that battle them. I mean, till this day, I think Sigourney Weaver is one of the most badass female action stars of all time. Like, I love her.
Oh, you mean Sigourney Weaver from Alien Resurrection?
In every movie, even though that's not my favorite, is how I'll put it. Although the basketball scene was awesome. But making out with her alien sun fetus thing is just weird. Pretending to, and it wanting to mate with mommy. You know, we can get to that one here in a bit. Let's start with the good ones. So Alien, directed by Ridley Scott.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've seen this movie a million and a half times.
Me too.
But... I hadn't seen it in quite a while. I probably hadn't seen it in like a year or two. Both of us own like the Blu-ray quadrilogy, so it's always on my shelf. But it's just not one of those movies that I revisit super often outside of like maybe Halloween.
I'd say I watch it like I typically watch it like once a year until the last like 3 years. So me watching it, I the only reason I didn't watch it again recently is because when I first moved in my apartment like 8 months ago, I went on like an Alien kind of spree. So I rewatched Alien, Aliens, and then the director's cut or the assembly cut of Alien 3. So I had just seen them fairly recently. So
nice. I got through the whole quadrilogy, and this is the first time that I've ever felt, not that, I mean, the first two Alien movies are, they're interchangeable as far as which one's the best.
I agree with that.
In their own way. But this is the first time I've thoroughly enjoyed the first one more than the second one.
Interesting.
I don't know what clicked for me, but I think just the claustrophobic aspect of being in this dark, dank area and spending time with these characters, where none of them are an action hero, and it really feels like, even though, you know, Ellen Ripley is our lead, it never feels like she takes the spotlight till the last act.
I agree.
And watching it this time, even though I know the outcome of all the characters for some reason, it almost felt like I was so far removed from it that it really started to feel like, oh my God, who's gonna make it out of this thing? You know what I mean? Nobody feels safe in that movie.
Yeah.
And it really is, to me, the greatest monster design that we've ever had. It's ridiculous.
I actually agree. Like, I think Predator is a close second, but I actually have to agree with you. Like I think till this day, no one's beaten it. Not with prosthetics, not with CG, not with special effects. I think that I would have to say that if you want the truth, as a kid, even though I love this movie, I've probably seen Aliens more.
Same.
But the weird thing is I can't say which one I like better because I feel like they're very different movies. Like, to me, Alien is a masterpiece of a sci-fi horror film. Aliens is a sci-fi action thriller. So it's hard for me to say which one I like better because I feel like they're both 10 out of 10s, but they're very different genres. But something I would love to touch on, if you don't mind, I thought what was interesting that James Cameron did with Aliens was he was smart. He's like, okay, so we can't re-replicate Alien, right? Because for one thing, you know what it looks like now. Part of what makes that awesome is you've never seen anything like this before. It's this atmospheric, like, that is probably one of the best films of all time in terms of capturing an atmosphere of terror and maintaining it throughout an entire film. Like, that is a masterclass on that, Alien, the original. And I think what was smart about James Cameron is that he decided that, okay, I can't replicate that, and why would I? Why do I want to mess with a masterpiece? So instead, it's almost like he had respect for the first film. It's like, so what kind of sequel could I make? So instead, he writes a sci-fi action thriller where he goes further into it. You get to see more of the hive. You meet this queen that he invented, because that wasn't in the original. He invented this queen, and it became about this, you know, military group. And, you know, he created this kind of just amazing action suspense with Ripley right back in the thick of it. And we are, and now the action character has been established through character development of the first character. She's this fighter, you know. She's not necessarily action person, but she's a fighter, you know. She's a survivor, right? And she just gets extended in the sequel. And what I think is interesting is, if you really think about it, technically what he did for Aliens, in my opinion, he learned from and did the same thing with T2. Because if you look at Terminator 1, Terminator 1 is filmed like a horror slasher film. It's filmed like a slasher. It's a sci-fi horror film. And he did Terminator 2 in like 94 or 96 or 92, somewhere around there. But it was years after Aliens, right? So I think he realized the same thing. I can't replicate this. So instead, it becomes a sci-fi action thriller. Like, he learned from what he did with Aliens, and he applied that to T2. And the only reason I'm bringing this up is because I feel like, in a way, they took a similar route with the Predator franchise, where the first film is about one Predator stalking an elite military group, and it's this kind of it's a scary survival film for the actors, just like Alien, where it's like whittling them down to the final survivor kind of thing. And then in the second film,
it's a slasher.
Yeah, essentially it is, right? It's exactly the same way. And then if you think about it, the second one, sci-fi action thriller, it's set in like 1997 of this projected 19, it came out in like 1990, I think, but it was projected in 1997, this fictionalized future where LA is so bad with drug lords, apparently from the Colombian drug lords and the Jamaican drug lords, to the point where downtown LA is just this war zone, which sets up the perfect environment. And because it's a terrible city, every civilian's armed, which sets up the perfect environment for this sci-fi action thriller extravaganza, where we also get to expand on the predator. And instead of expanding on the nest and seeing more of them and a queen, it's still one predator, but now we get to expand more on his weaponry, his arsenal. And then there is more of them at the end, and you actually get to see what they do with the skulls, like what part of their kind of culture is, and you actually even get a little bit of the history with the whole situation with the gun at the end of it. It lets you realize so a lot of these films follow the same rubric that I think works really well for franchises in terms of how you extend. Like, they extend it differently because the monsters are different, but the notion of not trying to do the same thing and do something different with the second film, I think, is a good notion. I feel like a lot of them start struggling when they get to a third film. to me.
Totally. Go ahead.
Oh, no. Go right ahead. Like, that's kind of where I was going to end for that.
Cool. You know, it really feels something that James Cameron recognized, and who I don't know the Predator 2 director. It was the guy who did Nightmare on Elm Street 5. I know that, but I don't know his name. what James Cameron recognizes, even though Aliens is an action movie, similar to what Ridley Scott did, even though he takes it to a whole nother level, he still plays the monster really close to the chest. You only get it in really brief glimpses. You'll see like a lot of like body horror of like limbs being blown off, or kind of these brief glimpses of what's going on.
Talk about in Predator 2?
No, I'm talking about in Aliens.
Oh, in Aliens. Like, yeah.
Even though it's like big bombastic action movie where they're killing hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Sorry, my dogs are freaking out. They're killing hundreds of them. You only get brief glimpses of it. And I think once Alien 3 came out, and Alien Resurrection continued the series, I think the Xenomorph kind of took the spotlight, and everybody wanted to show just how weird and drippy and gross it was the time.
And it stops being scary.
A little bit of the magic out of it.
Yeah, it takes the magic because you see too much of it. And I'm like, the way I put it is, if you're going to go with something like that, then you have to change up the genre or the game. You have to do something interesting with it. Like, maybe you show more of that because something more interesting comes along. Like, maybe you show those because there's a new alien or something that's interesting, and that's the one that's you don't get to see more of, or something, you know. But I agree with you. Even that's one thing I have to say. If we're going into this, I hadn't seen Predators in quite a while. I had only seen it once in the theater, and I remember thinking, meh, you know.
Yeah.
And the weird thing is, I still kind of think meh, but what I like about it that Shane Black doesn't get is that I feel like the color grade and the way that film looks, it looks like a Predator movie. Like, I have to give it credit. And I actually feel like the concept for Predators is interesting. Like for those of you that haven't seen it, without spoils, it's essentially almost like a Predator Hunger Games. Like, you wake up in action. You literally wake up with a character as he's free falling out of the sky, like which is a great opening. I think that's cool. Yeah. Right. And then you run into other people who've all been dropped off on this place, and they kind of run into each other, and the one thing they had in common is they were all in battle in different countries around the world. You know, one was like a drug he was like in a Mexican gang, and he was like one of the top like murderers. Another person is a mercenary. There's a, you know, Colombian military sniper. You know, there's like all these people. There's the Yakuza guy who's really cool. There's all these people that clearly they're alphas, is the best way to put it, on Earth. And, you know, as they come together and they're trying to figure out where the hell they're going, and they realize the sun's not in the right place. And then, you know, there's kind of a reveal short way in with, you know what, I am going to get into spoilers a little bit, because this has just been out for a while.
It's been out for a long time.
Yeah. So, but like, essentially what I thought was a really cool concept was that this entire planet is a game preserve, like that the predators use to drop off stuff to hunt. That is a cool concept. I think that the concept of that film is cool. As a matter of fact, I felt the first hour, the first half of that film was really cool. I feel like the moment they run into Lawrence Fishburne, it starts to just go downhill. Like, there's this whole sequence with him where he's basically a crazy guy who tries to betray them. And the whole sequence isn't that interesting. And then he just dies. It's almost like the writers kill him in a way that's just as uninteresting to say that they knew this entire 20-minute sequence was pointless. Like, it's like it's like this, like, he's murdered in a way that reflects how useless his entire subplot was. There's like 20 minutes in the film where it comes to a drag. There is a sequence that I love. I love the way it's shot when they first come into the predator camp and they find out that there's another predator tied to the tree. There's a shot where they run and they're all tumbling down the mountain, which is a total homage to the original Predator, where Arnold Schwarzenegger goes sliding in the mountain. He's like, oh shit. And then he goes tumbling into the water. But what I love it, what about this is like he upped it as they're tumbling. I love the crane up as they're falling. All the shots are really kinetic and they like build momentum until they tumble off that cliff. And I love that sequence. I thought that sequence was great. However, there's a shot right after where this like predator aerial unit, you know, detects them and comes back, and that's like the reveal of the predators where they become invisible. And there's something about that shot that I found really corny. there's a predator that's just like crouching on a tree, and then the other one catches and they're just revealed, but they're revealed in like almost like this, they're almost like in this like, okay, try to be menacing. It's like the director just said try to be menacing, and it's like suddenly that becomes almost like this cartoonish reveal. Like, it's like they're supposed to be like it almost would have been cool if like something invisible caught it and maybe like it just flashed a piece of its face for a second. Like, even in the original, there are moments where like it would flash into being and then it would go invisible again, and that was cool. Like, that was cool. It like maintained some mystery. Yep. You know, like and I think that's one of those situations where, oh, we all know what predators look like, we just want to have a cool reveal, and if it were, if it works, fine, but that one just didn't work for me. It just felt really corny. And then I felt like the whole ending, to me, like the Yakuza scene was all right or whatever, but like, is it just me, or does it seem like when the predators are fighting each other at the end, it's kind of lame? Like, it seems like it's a bunch of cavemen fighting. And the weird thing is, these are supposed to be like the most elite hunters ever. I would expect them to have like their own fight style. I would expect it to some fisticuffs. I would expect like some warriors. I would expect some warriors to be jumping and when they're in viz, because it's CG, you can tell them. It shows them like jumping and flipping through trees and stuff. But all of a sudden, that stops when they're fighting, and they're just big brutes. Ugh. Just swinging
best. Like Jason Voorhees. They're
They're just like wide, stiff punches, stabs, and tackles is basically their entire. I'm like, that is so lame. Like, it's just, I don't know. Yeah. It just, I don't know. Like, yeah.
I think what's funny about these series is they start off so strong and they just progressively get worse.
Oh,
like,
dude.
That's not unique to Alien and Predator, but watching these back to back, it's like, all right, we have a couple great ones. All right, this one's okay.
For sure.
No, it's really bad.
And one thing about that I think is interesting, like if we're going to bounce around, if you're going to go to Alien 3, you guys might not know this, but that's actually directed by David Fincher. It was his first feature film. He had started with music videos before that, and notoriously, his experience with Alien 3 was so bad that he finished principal photography and had nothing to do with post-production. He was not there for any of the edit, for any of the post, anything, because he was so frustrated with Fox for interfering so much. And when they started, he had to start filming. Another director, I guess, got fired or quit. He came in the middle of production. They were already in production. And you can tell that this was a cash grab in the beginning, because they had started filming and they didn't have a finished script. So he was shooting while the script was still being written. And then he still managed to piece something together. Like, sorry.
Yeah, just to add in, they shopped around like three or four different scripts from three or four different writers. And the one they landed on wasn't the script that was made. There was a script that they landed on that was going to take place in almost like this religious temple with these monk-like characters. That was going to be...
I actually did not know, read anything about that. That's interesting.
Yeah, but then they rewrote it into being a prison. But then that's why there are so many religious monk-like characters within the prison. It was almost this smorgasbord of ideas from multiple different scripts.
And see, that makes sense, because it feels like that. And also, the assembly cut's much better. Like, I feel like the assembly cut is okay. Like, I would give it like it's all right. It's an okay movie, the assembly cut. The version that was released in theaters is so atrociously bad. So let me put this out. The guy, what's his name? The guy that was kind of nuts right? The guy that was kind of nuts that freed the alien. Okay.
Wait, who freed the alien in Alien 3?
Yeah. Remember they trapped the alien and then he goes in and frees him.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So that guy, that entire sequence was cut out of the original. The entire sequence where she actually traps it and then he goes in and lets it out and gets killed. And there's that whole, that's like a 15 to 18 minute sequence. That's just gone. So they never trapped it. There's just this random accidental explosion in the middle of trying to trap the alien. And his character just vanishes for no reason. You never knew what happened to him. Like, I think they just hoped that you'd assume that he died in all of the shenanigans, basically. Like, that, which is kind of a payoff for his character, because otherwise, why is he in the entire movie? Like, this crazy person, he's just there, and then he just vanishes? Like it didn't make any sense. And then also, in the original version, the alien hatches out of her as she's falling into the fire, and she grabs it with her hand and holds it, which kind of just was stupid. So they removed that in the final. But, like, I just find it interesting that you can still see pieces of what makes David Fincher awesome. Because, like, that entire sequence with the doctor when he dies and the alien comes up and hisses in her face, like, because David Fincher loves information, and he loves when he does show you a close-up, it's on something that's interesting. Like, he doesn't like to waste close-ups. The extreme close-up of the needle, the reflection in the needle as, like, you know, like the build-up to that, I thought that was great. Like, you know what I mean? And then also when the chief is berating the doctor and his head's kind of tilted and he's irritated as he's talking to him, that's a Fincher shot because he's receiving information and that's the close-up, his reaction to this like, you can see pieces of what makes Fincher awesome. Like, I would have loved to have seen a movie unencumbered and just let him play with that movie. You know what I mean? Like, I really would have, because I feel like there are moments of that film that are kind of great, you know, but just overall, the film's just not on par with the other ones, right?
There are whole sequences and kills in that movie that are excellent. Like you mentioned, the reflection in the needle, that entire scene where he's sedating Ripley, and then as she's being sedated, he gets, like, Tywin Lannister gets murdered, and then you're like, she just got sedated, and she's in the room. Like, that's excellent tension.
It is. That was the best scene in the movie, probably.
Yeah. The entire scene in the last act where they're trying to trap it down the corridors and having to have all this, like, hodgepodge of murderers work together.
Yeah.
Should be awesome, but I swear to God, the CGI is not done in this movie.
No,
like, it's like 20% done.
But that was early. That was, like, early CGI, though. It did not age well. And honestly, a lot of people I remember commented in the theaters back then that it looked too cartoonish. Like, it looked too.
It's rough. It's not even cartoonish. It doesn't look cartoonish. It looks undone.
It really looks undone.
You know what? You know what sucks about that is when you see, like, the close-ups of the xenomorph, it still looks great.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Because it's real.
This is a slasher movie, or, well, a monster movie that takes place in a prison. Why are you trying to show this thing in so much light?
I know.
Like, you could have hid this very easily. You know what I mean? This shouldn't be a problem.
I agree. It's basically trying to show more of the monster, basically, and to do that, they used CG that was early, and it kind of just takes away some of the suspense. Also, in the original, because in the assembly cut, which is more interesting, is Ripley washes up on shore, and it also kind of gives the foreshadowing of all of the flies and maggots and the lice problem and all of that, and the alien hatches. It's this really cool hatch scene out of a dead boar or whatever.
Wow.
Yeah, the cow. And in the original, that was not the case, just so you know. In the original, it was one of the guys had a dog, and it was stupid because this boar scene was the version, the way Fincher had planned it. But in the original, the guy had a Rottweiler. And they just basically later grabbed an insert of the alien facehugger's, like, hands coming over the wall as the dog's barking, and that's all you see. And then there's a shot later when they basically do a parallel editing sequence of when they're burning the bodies, and it's this sad moment. It shows the alien hatching, and the dog starts screaming, and he falls over, and it's hatching out of his stomach, and it rips out. That's basically was the original. But I think the boar one is just way better. Like, the version of that assembly cut, I'd never seen that before. And I was like, that worked so much better, in my opinion. Like, it just really did. So,
because it's gruesome.
It really is.
The movie, The movie is really violent. It even starts off with an excellent, very heartbreaking autopsy scene.
I know. I know.
It's really good. But that was an interesting choice too.
Yeah.
I actually, oddly enough, I kind of liked this choice, but I know it's kind of controversial to get rid of Newt and Hicks off screen
Yeah.
between movies. But you know what's weird to me about Aliens is I actually didn't care much for that group. Hicks and Newt were probably my least favorite characters in that movie.
Oh, really? Yeah,
Yeah, like
I
when
won't
I
lie. One of my favorite characters in that one, I like fucking love Fast Gas. Fast Gas. Like, well, when she, like she was so cool. Let's rock! Till this day, I always say that when I'm playing alien games. I'm like, let's rock! And then I start shooting.
Whenever I think back to characters I love, I think back to Hudson, of
Yeah,
course.
Hudson's great.
I think back to Alpone. I think back
Oh,
to not another day
fucking.
on the call. I think back to Vasquez. I think back to Ellen.
Even that asshole Burke was more of an interesting character, even though he was a douchebag. Like, I was so happy when he died. That was another thing, man. That scene in Aliens is iconic when he traps her in there with the face hugger. Like the fact that it's not CG, the animatronics, that shit looks real. Till this day, there are two shots that freak me out. And it's the shot where it's running along the floor and it's like her eyesight. It looks so real. And then there's a couple of two or three quick cuts. It's the shot right before it wraps around her neck. It crawls across her, and then there's a shot. It almost looks like a GoPro camera shot before a GoPro, where it comes right at the camera really fast, and it looks so real that it is so nerve-wracking. Every time I see it, I'm like, I always go, like every time it gets her, I'm not joking, bro. And I love that it makes me do that. I don't do that with CGI. I just don't, because it's not real, you know? And that's kind of the issue I had with Alien Covenant. If we're going into it, like, I feel
If
like,
we're discussing CGI,
yeah,
huh?
if we're discussing CGI, even though it's better CGI, it's just so, it looks so much like CGI that it takes me out of it. Like, there's one moment where I didn't mind it. So I know we're hovering because we're talking about the series, but I know that I remember the one thing I will say that I think is interesting. Is both Alien Covenant and Prometheus had the same effect upon first and second viewings, just Alien Covenant less redeeming, in my opinion. But like Prometheus, the first time I saw it, I had all these expectations that I think were very specific to what I assumed it was going to be. So I remember being very disappointed the first time I saw Prometheus. But then I went back and watched it again, and I remember quite liking it the second time. Like the second time, I'd probably give it like a B plus. Like I actually liked it. Like I realized when I watched it for what it is, I actually thought it was very interesting and it was beautifully shot and I thought it was really well made. My only gripe is like the moment, like in the beginning, there's the character's really stupid with this, like two characters are really stupid, like basically at the same time in the script for things to work out. But I would argue that happens in Alien Covenant too, but on a way more profound level. And it's one freaking stupid character basically decides to lock two people in a room because of contagion, even though the blood was coughed all over her face. So she's also a fucking hypocrite. She locks them in the room. The woman only dies because she gets screwed by her friend. And
That
then
seems
she
so violent.
accidentally just shoots the canister because she's stupid. And if you see them in the background, you're like, this dumb woman. And then she blows herself up, and you're like, you literally killed two people. Like, you killed yourself and you killed the woman just because you're dumb. But like, and the worst part is, then it's like I'm supposed to feel bad because it's Danny McBride's wife, but I'm like, I hated her. Like, I'm glad she's dead. I'm sad that the other two people died at this point. Like, and then the thing with the alien is. Like the shower scene, I think it's almost cool. Like the tail part is cool. And then it becomes this really CGI thing. It goes through his mouth. And again, it's showing too much of the alien. I almost felt like it would have been better if you just kept that to cuts and moments of terror. But then like the alien comes out of the water and it looks way better than it used to, but it still looks extremely CG. And I'm like, that why was that not a prosthetic? There's not a single real creature in Covenant at all. Prometheus only has CG at the very end when the alien hatches and the lights are flashing and it looks pretty good. Like
Looks good. Yeah.
everything's practical in Prometheus for the most part, except for the ships and stuff you can't help, right? But Alien Covenant, because it's Ridley shot, it's shot well because it's Ridley Scott, but the alien at all times is just CG. I don't think there was a single special effect prosthetic made. And I think it shows because I never
could get grounded into that aspect of the film, which is like a huge draw for the movie. Like, I love David, don't get me wrong. He's the, essentially, if you think about Prometheus and Alien Covenant, they are David movies. Like, that's what they are, you know? But I just felt like the monster element of Alien Covenant was just terrible. Like, and unfortunately, it just took me out of the film. That's why I couldn't love it. Like, it was meh, but it wasn't terrible, but I didn't like it either, if that makes sense. I liked the I liked the hatching scene of the first Alien with David. I liked that hatching scene, but that's it.
Yeah, totally. I agree with pretty much everything you just said. But you know what's funny is everything that I love, and you just kind of mentioned this, everything that I love about Prometheus and Alien Covenant all comes down to the story plot points around the company and the androids. I think
for sure.
All of the kind of characters become monster fodder. But I really feel like after Ridley Scott did Blade Runner, I feel like he just wants to focus on androids when it comes to sci-fi. Like, I know, it's kind of a joke. No, I'm really serious. Like, when you look at all the sci-fi he's done, whether it be kind of having a piece of the sequel to Blade Runner, doing that show on HBO, I think it was called House of Wolves.
I haven't seen it. I know what you're talking about. The Wolves. I know what you're talking about. I saw the trailer. Yeah. I haven't seen it, though, so I don't know.
Yeah, between his collaboration with Blade Runner, that HBO show, and going back to Alien Covenant, I really just think when he goes back to sci-fi, he really wants to work on like the philosophical implications of human-like androids, and that's where
dislike at all. That's the most interesting part of Alien Covenant. And the other thing I hate about Alien Covenant is there anyone that didn't know that David had swapped? Like, really? I don't think there's anybody that didn't figure that out. So this reveal was lame because we're basically waiting for it, you know? And it's just kind of like, if you're going to do that, just, I don't know, do it better or just don't bother trying to do that. Because it just seems so obvious. I don't think I knew a single person who was duped by that or surprised at the reveal at the end. Like, everybody I know was like, yeah, that was, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it just.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. For some reason, like, I don't know if it was like so poorly done or if it was just done away. It never bothered me because I never felt like I was trying to be duped by that twist.
But it's like, it seems like it, because like if you even think about it, the David who's the Walter, right?
Yeah.
It shows him reaching for the knife, right? The David. Mm-hmm. It shows David reaching for the knife. And then when he shows up, he has the cut on his face and he totally chopped off his hand. So the cut, they were trying to make you think that it was clearly Walter because David was the one grabbing the knife. So he got slashed in the face and then he killed David. That's literally what they were trying to do. So it's just like, what was the point of that even if it's so obvious what you're doing? Like, it's so obvious what it's going to be that just come on, you know? Like, just, I don't know. Like, ugh.
Yep. And I wish they would have spent more time. Like, they set up, I mean, first off, the engineers is a cool idea, but compared to the giant fossil that you see in Alien,
for sure,
seeing that it's basically a giant blue guy is a little disappointing. You know what I mean?
And see, that's what I thought the first time I saw it. But then the second time, how it kind of intertwines in what they were doing, the fact that they seeded planets with their own DNA, like, mm-hmm. we are essentially seeded by aliens, and like what they're essentially doing is, it's almost like experiments, and then they wipe them out if they don't go well, right? Like, it's like yep. I thought the idea of that was very cool. And the one thing I like about Prometheus is essentially David's doing the same thing. He's doing what his creators have done, you know, like there's the opening mm-hmm. scene where he's like, what else am I for? You know, and he's mm-hmm. like, that's what we're all trying to figure out. We all want to create life, you know? And so David's total life purpose is to create his own life. That's why one of the scenes I did like, and one of the few times I still thought it would have been better with the real thing. But when the creature, he's trying to talk to it and it's right there. Mm-hmm. I liked that scene, you know?
Yeah. I like that scene a lot too. I wish, like, even though it's set up for an amazing shot, I wish he wouldn't have just murked the entire civilization.
I agree.
Like, David in that civilization would have been so fascinating to watch.
I agree.
A giant action scene.
Honestly, if the movie had been a half hour longer and you had worked that in better, or maybe the civilization was still there when they got there, or it, or something like you had some great elements to create something cool, and it almost seemed like that scene was just, like you said, set up for a big shot, and it was essentially a big set piece, and it wasn't even a set piece, it was a big CG shot that was basically just for a big cool VFX shot, and it doesn't, you know, like it's like there's no emotion into it. We don't know those people, we don't know anything about them, you know what I mean? Like, if anything, if anything, the person we cared about was Elizabeth Shaw, and she was an afterthought too. Oh, she's just already dead. Like, like, you know, seeing what happened to her might have been great, considering she was the only survivor and like the Ripley of Prometheus. You know, I mean, the whole that whole surgery scene was fantastic. Like, that was
that really is a great scene.
Yeah,
that's so good.
It's but so
even,
good.
Even what I was saying, like, you have these giant ideas that we're fascinated in, and Ridley Scott is like, yeah, but I want to talk about the android.
but if you think about it, in Prometheus, I think it was a much better film, and it still worked. David was still at the center point, but it was a lot of practical. The story was about a lot more. You know, like, a lot of what was going on was really cool, and because it was practical, the sets and stuff felt real. Again, Prometheus had atmosphere. It really did. I felt like Alien Covenant does not feel like it has atmosphere to me. Like, it feels like there are moments that start to have it, and then I'm pulled out of it over and over and over again. And that's kind of what I was upset about, because I really wanted to like Alien Covenant. That's the problem. Yeah. Like, I really want to. I'm like more irritated because I wanted to like it, because the second time I started to like Prometheus more – and I was like, okay, now I'm actually kind of into this, and now I really can't wait for Alien Covenant, you know? So, and then the trailer actually made me really excited, you know? And I was like, oh, it's going to be great. And then I was like, no.
Halfway through, aw.
It's like, oh, shit.
What do you think? So, these two have, these aliens and these predators have met before. You know what really pisses me off?
And they changed the canon too, by the way, by doing Prometheus. Because in the Predator canon, the Predators created the aliens as the perfect species to hunt, if I'm correct. Like,
did they create them?
Well, you don't know for sure, but it's almost implied that they did, or that they've been working with them for a long time. So I'm like, what, you got them from David? Like did he start selling them on a bartering auction? Well,
you know what's funny is having those two together is a fantastic idea.
It is. And, like, it should
be. The idea from a plot point of having like the ultimate hunter, you know, go up against the ultimate predator is really cool.
It should be.
It should be.
Yes.
Do you think they should ever try it again, or do you think they should
I want a good one. So I want to say yes, but not Paul Thomas Anderson and the Strauss brothers, who were basically just marketing their visual effects company. If you don't know this, the Strauss, whatever Strauss, I think that's their name, the directors of Alien vs. Predator Requiem, they own a visual effects company. And if you remember that really terrible sci-fi film back in the day called Skyline, they also directed that. And I'm pretty sure it wasn't about trying to make a good movie. It was about, look, the budget for this, we made it for only $10 million. And we made it look like a $100 million visual effects extravaganza. They were basically, which I think is kind of brilliant, actually. It's not a very good movie, but the trailers and all the publicity and everything, it looks like this big Hollywood film. And by the way, we did it for $10 million. It's the ultimate marketing strategy ever. Like, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. But then they moved on and did Alien vs. Predator Requiem as well. And it shows that they're just a visual effects company, because the VFX looked great when they happened. Cinematography and lighting. They even had the actress in there from 24, who I like. And the lighting is so bad in that movie. Like, I understand you want darkness, but when you can't see what's going on, when it's implied by silhouettes and you know, you can make stuff look dark, but still let the audience see what's happening, especially if it's an action scene, okay? The one thing about Aliens vs. Predator Requiem that I'll give it credit for is I like that it was actually rated R. Like, the first one, the fact that it was PG-13 irritates me. Like, Paul W.S. Anderson always has this, he always has the clean look where everything looks very sterile and clean and pretty, even if it shouldn't. And that's his style. That's fine. But because it's PG-13, it just ruined a lot of what makes Alien and Predator cool. And it also, I feel like he doesn't know those species very well, because the fact that one alien killed two predators was ridiculous. Like, that would never happen, even if the predator doesn't have their shoulder cannon. Like, I understand getting the first one by surprise, and then that fight was all right. But, like, there's no way one predator should get killed by two aliens, just if you just know the cannon. Like, that's just crazy. Like, I was like, so basically it's a way to get rid of two predators quickly so that one predator is the central focus point with her so he could give her a shield and a predator and an alien tail spear.
And in Alien Requiem, it's canon that these aliens can have full conversations. I don't know that. The scene where Worm Tongue is blasting the aliens with like the icy like,
blast.
And then the aliens look at each other and they single one out and they're like, "We're gonna have to kill you, dude." And he's like, "Don't do that." And they're like, "We gotta get out of here." And he's like, "We can figure something else out." And they're like, "We don't have time." Like, it's all through hissing, but you're like, are these things
happening? You're talking about Alien Resurrection, right?
Oh, yeah, not Requiem, Resurrection.
Yeah. When they need out of the cave, they're like, so we're going to kill you now. And it's like, wait, why? Wait, we can talk about this. It's like, sorry, Sunny, you got to go.
Like, you just blasted me with the little frost cannon, like, for the third time.
And I'm done.
That whole face.
You're right, though. But, like, and the crazy thing about, to me, Alien vs. Predator Requiem is actually a much better setup for what I would think an Alien vs. Predator film that involves humans should be like. Like, it crash lands on the planet, towns getting infested by aliens, people are getting murdered left and right, very bloody. Predator comes in to clean up. Honestly, the story for Requiem is actually what I would expect a good one to be like if the characters weren't crappy and the directors knew what they were doing. Basically, you know what I mean? Like, the setup is actually more like what you would expect it to be. Like, I could totally see a Predator coming in being a cleanup crew for this fuck-up that they had, you know? You know, because the ship crashes, they get this shit, you know, so you have to send in another Predator to, you know, clean it up and, you know, remove it. And he's, you know, and he's pouring the stuff over it and getting rid of everything. And like I thought that was cool. Like, that element of it, I think, is cool. But it's just really, really trash characters that it's treated like a slasher film where all the characters are stupid or irritating and you just want them all to die. So who cares when they do? You know, I like that there's finally a Pred alien if I could see it. But like, an implied Pred alien that's so poorly lit.
Yeah,
you see pieces of it at times, and this isn't like clever seeing pieces of the aliens not reveal too much. No, this is just bad lighting. Like, they clearly planned on showing it.
Yep. Gosh, both of these series started out so well.
They did.
Like, they're
Don't get me started on Shane Black's Predator. Shane Black went with the whole new age thing where everything looks clean and colorful, and I don't mind color, but when everything looks clean, it just doesn't look real right off the bat. It feels like a PG-13 movie, even though it's a rated R film. The only thing he did in that film that I liked is there's this constant joke that is hammered in multiple times, and I feel like that is only for really nerdy fans, which I am. The original Predator script was actually called Hunter. It was not called Predator, which actually makes sense, because what he's doing isn't being a predator at all. He's being a hunter. He's being a game hunter. So there's a scene where they come into the base, and they're like, we call it a predator, and they're like, and she's like, why'd you call it that? And there's like, yeah, well, he stalks his prey and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, but that's more of a hunter. That's more of like a game hunter. And they're like, we already took a vote. Predator sounds cool. You know, and then every time they're like, they call it a predator, they're like, but isn't what he does more of a hunter kind of thing? There's like this joke. And I feel like that's just for the fans that know that the original script was called Hunter and it was changed by the studio or whatever. And I like that joke, but I feel like he makes the mistake that a lot of these, and I feel like, let's be fair, he did Iron Man 3, so he's coming from, I think, the Marvel universe where you're setting up other franchises again, and it has that thing where it tries to be funny every step of the way, by the way. Like, it tries to be funny every step of the way. It takes you out of everything. There's one other cool shot where he throws the disc and, like, blood falls all over this, like, invisible predator, and it looks really cool. But outside of that, the only thing you're missing, I don't know if you want me to spoil it or not because you didn't get a chance to see it yet.
Spoil it.
Okay, so basically, the one thing he did that I thought was interesting story-wise is he came up with a reason for why predators collect the skull with the spine, and I thought that was cool. They're essentially making themselves even better hunters through genetic modification. Because the predator that crashes, they realize when they take a blood sample that it has human DNA crossed with it. So they're basically making bigger, better predators. They're basically improving their species through the spinal fluid and DNA of the top. That's why they pick the top prey, because it's the best to hunt, but it should also be the alpha prey that has the best genes, essentially, right? So there's a predator. So there's a predator that basically comes after this other predator that's like 8 feet tall, and it's super muscular and really big. And of course, it's CG the whole movie. It's not practical once. Like, it is not practical once.
Jeez.
Meanwhile,
is there anything redeeming? Should I watch Shane Black's Predator for any reason? Is there a really cool scene or a set piece?
I don't think Iron Man's very good, but you liked it. So I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that, like, you might like his spunk. You might like it. I don't know. I felt like it has some moments that are cool, but overall, I did not care for it at all. Like, I didn't hate it. I liked it about as much as I liked Alien Covenant. So it's meh, borderline, oh boy, like, basically is where it is for me. Right. I can't even say it has some super cool sequences, really. I felt like most of the sequences I didn't think were that interesting. And I think that's another thing I found problematic, because of there's supposed to be so much going on. I like the idea of not making someone with a disability some kind of hindrance the story, making them actually celebrated. I thought that was really awesome, and I won't explain what I mean by that in case you do watch it. I liked that aspect of storytelling, but I just felt like the ragtag group you're along with, I find them all annoying. I find them really irritating. I find them really irritating, and they're always cracking jokes even when it's inappropriate. There's even a moment where two of them look at each other lovingly and kill each other, basically. And it's really funny. Like, it was supposed to be emotional, and I could not stop laughing. Like, I actually rewound it and watched it again. I couldn't help myself.
It's one of those.
It's one of those. So I would actually love to see you watch it to see if your opinion's different than mine. I'd love to talk to you about it. Maybe we could talk about this off podcast stream. Maybe when we're talking about Legend of Shang-Chi, maybe you can see that one, and we could have a little afterthought discussion, because
I'm down for that. I need a break from bad movies. This one's been a doozy.
I know, because you wouldn't rewatch those. I didn't have to rewatch them, because I was very bored 6 months ago, so I watched AVP and AVP Requiem back to back, and I was like, maybe if I watch them years later, I'll change my view. And then I was like, nope.
I only want classic movies for the next week.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you.
Awesome. Well, I think my final consensus is we have some of the most interesting, well-crafted monsters in any movie, and they had their prime time a very long time ago.
For sure.
I don't think the studios have felt comfortable giving up that creative freedom for somebody to take it to a new direction. I know that there was a moment where Neil Blomkamp almost got a shot at Alien.
I was very excited about that. I was so sad when it was. Also, there was an unproduced Alien 3 script that you can actually find online. It was the original script before they did Alien 3, and it was actually way more interesting. It was a direct sequel to Alien 2.
Is it the one in the mall?
No, it actually involves Hicks is one of more of the leads, actually, and Ellen is still in hypersleep, and there's an entire sequence on a ship. They're basically captured by they're like pulled in by another ship, and I don't remember if it was nesting on their ship or whatever, but it gets loose on the ship, and it almost reminds me, like, I almost feel like aspects of Alien Isolation were pulled from this script. Because it's like they're pulled onto this larger station, and a queen gives birth, and it's another action set piece movie like Aliens, but it's like a direct sequel from Aliens, and Hicks is in it, and I don't remember if Newt is in it, but like Hicks is in it, and he runs into some and it becomes this action movie, and I think Ripley the whole time is still in hypersleep, and the cool thing is the way it ends, it almost ends like a setup from Alien 3. But Hicks and Newt actually survive because they get separated. I think she continues to drift into space or something, and they get pulled. So at the end of Alien 3, if I remember correctly, at the end of the script or something, she's still off drifting. And it's almost like the perfect setup for you could have made Alien 3, Alien 4. And, you know, and that could have been like Ripley's solo movie and the end of her character or whatever. But this was almost like a second half of Alien 2, or it's not. It's its own movie, but it takes place after Alien 2. And Hicks and I think Newt are in it as well. I believe Newt is in it as well. And yeah, because I remember reading it like at work. I had like 2 or 3 days where it was really slow at work like 2 years ago, and I just like blew through it, and I was like, this would have been pretty awesome. Like,
I was like, yeah. If only. Do you know, I was reading, and I don't know how true this is, but I was reading that during the production of Alien 3, Sigourney Weaver was incredibly against depictions of any guns within movies, and she was just coming off her Oscar nomination for Alien 2, and she was so adamant about there being no weaponry in Alien 3 that she finally convinced the studio to go along with that, and that's why they're in an entire prison complex where guards don't have weapons, and their entire reason behind that is that they work off the honor system. Which is actually a line in the movie.
No, it is.
And he was like, well, there's a fire axe, but it's not going to get you far. We work off the honor system here. And yeah. I was like, your maximum security planet prison works off the honor system.
Oh, well yeah. And I feel like, but I feel like you might be able to actually make that work if you think about how it's set up though, right? It's a maximum security prison that's isolated on a planet that gets shipments to the prison as far as everything's going correctly though. So I would imagine if they revolted and killed everybody, I'm sure the shipments would stop and they'd starve to death. Is what I would assume. It's like you kind of have to if you want to still be taken care of. But if you want the truth, the fact that they don't have weapons, I won't lie. I'm not saying I'm pro anti-weapon, but I think it probably made it more interesting if you're going to have just one alien, because then the question becomes, you mean to tell me you guys have all these guns and this one alien, everyone's missing their shots. This is what's going on.
Wrecking you guys.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah. But it's probably another kind of calling back to the original movie taking place in some sort of temple and not being in a prison. You know what I mean? That would make a lot more sense.
I could see that. It does feel like they tried to replicate some of what made the first one great in the third one. And in some scenes, like the doctor's beheading scene and all of that, it was very good there. So like there are moments where it actually does have some great, it has some great moments in a film that's just littered with a lot of problems basically, and it also had some interesting characters like the African-American dude who was in a bunch of movies back then. I actually thought his character was kind of interesting because he admits that he's like a murderer and a rapist of women or whatever, but he's still through religion trying to turn over this new leaf and do something better like right now, which I find kind of interesting.
I thought that was awesome. And he's like this natural leader, and he's like keeping all of these people in line, and he's potentially the worst of them. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, he's like, I was a murderer and a rapist of women, but like through religion, he's found a better calling, and he's always trying to be a better person since he's been there. So it's almost like it's almost like the story of a prison conversions would happen all the time, right? But like he's actually trying to live up to it in this really fucked up situation, you know? So like and I also liked the joke about what was it, what'd they call him, 72 or whatever. the guy, and they're like, what's with this 77 thing or whatever, and they're like, oh, we snuck in and we got a hold of his medical records, it's his IQ. Right. Like he's kind of on the slower end of things, and like they just call him like I just thought that was a funny, that seems very much like I could believe that, you know, like in a prison situation, like.
Yeah, that movie is definitely not bad. It's just a little messy.
It's very messy.
Some really great ideas and some really cool shots, some really cool sequences. It's worth a watch.
For sure. I agree. Yeah. Well, right on. All right, guys. So I hope this was okay. Hopefully the audio turns out decently, because like I said, we are doing this over Discord due to social distancing, and this is our first time not doing it in the same room, so we're kind of trying this out. If this doesn't sound great, then if we have to do this again, we might try something else. But thank you guys for being with us for episode 7. I can't believe we're on episode 7 already.
Jeez, that's awesome.
I know, I'm super excited. But yeah, I guess we'll see you guys next time. This is Cinescussion. I'm Fortune.
And I'm Dylan.
And we'll see you guys next time. Have a good one. Bye, everyone.